Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 8th Canto, Chapter 22, Text 6 and 7. So 6 should be on the board. So we'll chant 6 together, and then I'll chant 7 by myself. Yasmin vairanubandena. Yasmin vairanubandena. Vyudhena vibudhetara. Vyudhena vibudhetara. Bhavo levare siddhim. Bhavo levare siddhim. Yam uhai kanta yogina. Yam uhai kanta yogina. Yasmin vairanubandena. Vyudhena vibhudhetara. Bhavo levare siddhim. Yamu hai kanta yogina. Others. Vaishnavis. Chant the second one. Tenaham nigrihitosmi bhavata bodhikarmana bharascha varunai pasar nati vridhe nacha pyate. Word for translation. Yasmin, unto you, vaira anubandena, by continuously treating as an enemy. Yudhena, firmly fixed by such intelligence. The Buddha Itara, the demons, those other than the demigods. Bahava, many of them. Labare, achieved. Siddhim, perfection. Yam, which. Uha, it is well known. Ekanta yogina. Ekanta yogina. equal to the achievements of the greatly successful mystic yogis. Tena, therefore, aham, I, nigrita asmi, although I am being punished, bhavata, by your lordship, buddhi karmana, who can do many wonderful things, badacha, I am arrested and bound, varunai pasai, by the ropes of Varuna, naati virte, I am not at all ashamed of this, nacha vyate, nor am I suffering very much. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Many demons who are continuously inimical toward you finally achieve the perfection of great mystic yogis. Your lordship can perform one work to serve many purposes. And consequently, although you have punished me in many ways, I do not feel ashamed of having been arrested by the ropes of Varuna, nor do I feel aggrieved. Purport. Bali Maharaj appreciated the Lord's mercy not only upon him, but upon many other demons. Because this mercy is liberally distributed, the Supreme Lord is called all-merciful. Bali Maharaj was indeed a fully surrendered devotee, but even some demons who were not at all devotees, but merely enemies of the Lord, attained the same exalted position achieved by many mystic yogis. Thus, Bali Maharaj could understand that the Lord had some hidden purpose in punishing him. Consequently, he was neither unhappy nor ashamed because of the awkward position in which he had been put by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Aginatam Anam Dasha Janam Jana Shalakaya Chakshuna Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Upakara Mayam Dadati Swapadantikam. So when Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, okay, do you think he was thinking like this, that, oh, here's a great opportunity to get some exercise? You know, here's this rain and these inhabitants are being really, the inhabitants, the residents of Vrindavan are being really put in a difficult position. Oh, this is a good opportunity. I've been taking it easy around here. I have a pretty cushy lifestyle. I'll get some exercise and I'll lift Govardhan Hill. Probably not. Do you think he was thinking, this is a great opportunity to show off in front of the gopis? No, I don't think that was his reason. So he lifted Govardhan Hill. Why? He wanted to protect the residents of Vrindavan. You know, he was trying to protect his devotees. Same thing. When Krishna expanded himself into 16,108 Krishnas, or 16,100, whatever. 16,000. I'm not sure the exact number. It's definitely 16,000 plus forms to be the husband of those princesses that were captured, being held captive by Bomasura. Yeah, Bomasura. He wasn't doing that just to see, let's see how powerful I am. And same thing, his motive was, let me help my devotees. Okay? So that's Krishna's nature. Krishna's, very benevolent. As mentioned here in this purport, it says the Supreme Lord is called all-merciful. He's merciful to his devotees. And that's stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu Namedvestosanapya Ye Bhajanti Tumam Bhakcham Maite Teshu Chapyam. He's very merciful to his devotees. But even beyond that, Krishna is merciful to all living entities. It's not just that he's merciful only to his devotees. Krishna is interested in benedicting all living entities. All living entities. That's Bali Maharaj mentions that here. He says, many demons who are continuously inimical toward you finally achieve the perfection of great mystic yogis. So Krishna is interested in benedicting all living entities. Why? Because ultimately all living entities are Krishna's, we're all part of Krishna's spiritual family. You know, all the living beings in the material world are actually, we're just wearing different types of dresses. We're wearing the dress of a human being or a bird or a cat or a fish or a dog or a pig or whatever, or, a microbic germ. But in essence, we're all part and part, we're spirit souls, we're part and parcel of Krishna. We're all part of Krishna's, we're Krishna's spiritual children. We're Krishna's spiritual offspring. So Krishna is, desiring the ultimate welfare of all his spiritual offspring. So that's why. You know, he has a paternal affection. You know, Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita, in that famous verse, he says that he orders this release out of his paternal affection on the living being who's originally his beloved son, like that. So we're all, you know, very intimately related to Krishna as his, you know, spiritual children. And he's always desiring, you know, benediction for all his spiritual offspring. And, you know, because we're in different kind of situations here in the material world, he has to relate to everybody differently. You know, you help somebody who's in one situation one way and somebody's in another situation another way. But ultimately it's, you know, and Bali Maharaj is appreciating this point, that whatever Krishna does, it's for the ultimate benefit of that living entity. Maybe not necessarily, you know, this what's ultimately immediately pleasurable and what's ultimately beneficial. Prabhupada used to make that distinction every now and then, you know, shreyas and prayas. See? So generally, conditioned souls in the material world are interested in prayas, which means immediately gratifying. You know? But then there's shreyas. Shreyas means what's ultimately beneficial. That's what Krishna is interested in. Krishna is interested in what's ultimately beneficial for every living entity. And that's why sometimes, you know, it's kind of difficult to understand. How is it, you know, how can people say that God is all, you know, powerful, all-knowing, all-loving? Look at the kind of things that are happening to people. But it's because Krishna is not interested in, you know, gratifying our, you know, material senses right here, right now. He's interested in sort of making sure that the kind of things that are happening to us are going to help us progress towards what's ultimately beneficial. Krishna's interested in seeing every living entity progress towards what's ultimately beneficial. What's ultimately beneficial, of course, is for that living entity to revive their awareness of their original nature, which is completely spiritual, and understand what their eternal relationship is with Krishna, and make progress towards going back to God or pure devotional service. That's what Krishna's interested in. So sometimes, as a means to that end, sometimes Krishna can just like benedict somebody like Sudama Brahman, and you know that we can all relate to that one. Oh, that's the kind of benediction I'd like to receive, you know, what Sudama Brahman got, because you know, he got everything. It seemed like he got his cake and he could eat it too. He was just got to see Krishna, he got the association, and he got went home and his whole, you know, his little shack or whatever it was transformed into a palatial, you know, a palace, and there's all sorts of servants and opulence, and you know, so when we think, oh, that's the kind of benediction I want from Krishna. But actually that's no different from the benediction that was received by, say, Putana. You know, Putana got killed by Krishna. Some people get killed by Krishna. But the benediction is ultimately the same in the sense that Putana, she got killed by Krishna, but she got elevated to the platform of Vatsalya Ras. You see? So, like, from a mundane perspective, it might appear that, oh, how is this mercy of Krishna? But it is. You know, and that's, you know, we have to have confidence in that through the eyes of the scripture, Shastra Chakshu, that what's happening to people in general, devotees and people in general, it's ultimately, you know, it's Krishna's part of a big plan of Krishna to bring that person closer to pure devotional service. Krishna, once again, he's interested in what's ultimately beneficial for every living entity. Just on that point here, this is an excerpt from a lecture Prabhupada gave. I didn't record when, but he goes, Krishna is ready to respond to any rasa you want to deal with him in. That is Krishna's position. Kamat, krodat, bayat, dvesat. So what to speak of those who are loving? Just like Putana. Putana wanted to kill Krishna. That was her purpose. But when Putana was killed by sucking her breast and life both, then Putana was given the position of Krishna's mother. Krishna took the bright side. Krishna thought, whatever her intention may have been, she came to me just like a mother and I sucked her breast. Therefore, she is my mother. Papa goes now. She came as enemy, but Krishna did not take the inimical side. He took the motherly side. Similarly, the gopis, they came to Krishna out of lust, but out of lust they became purified. Just like, and here's Prabhupada makes a really nice analogy. He says, just like the sun. The sun evaporates water from the urinal, but the sun is not polluted. The urinal becomes sterilized. This is the process. Yeah. Just try to approach Krishna some way or other, then your life is successful. It doesn't matter, kamat, krodat, bayat, dvesat. So Prabhupada goes, this is the process. It's the process, it's also, it's a principle. He's described, the principle is that Krishna is, as I say, all-merciful, or all-good absolute. Any kind of association, any kind of contact you have with Krishna is beneficial. Just like, and he gives that, as I said, brilliant analogy there about the sun. You know, the sun, you know, especially like imagine if you're out in the, like the Mojave Desert or something like that, in the middle of the sun, in the summertime, it's 138 degrees or something like that, you know, zero humidity. And the sun is just like blazing down on the desert sand, you know. You could like spill like a ton of wastewater out on that surface there, and within hours, it's going to be evaporated, and the whole situation is mentioned, it gets sterilized. And, the whole place is purified again. And the sun doesn't become contaminated. So that's it. So that's why it's recommended. But that's why Prabhupada says, some way or other, you know, just try to approach Krishna some way or other. Another nice story in this regard is that story Prabhupada tells of this thief. He was hearing a Bhagavatam class someplace. And, he was hearing about how Krishna is, you know, very nice young boy. He frolics in the forest of Vrindavan, and he's very beautifully decorated with so many jewels, you know, nice ornaments and everything like that, very costly jewels and ornaments. So this thief, he wasn't a devotee, he was just a thief, and he was thinking, this sounds like a good opportunity. You know, Vrindavan, that's not very far. I'll go there. Let me go there. And I'll go to the forest where this being described here, where Krishna is, you know, residing, and I'll try to meet this boy, and I think I'll be able to talk him out of, you know, talk him into giving up those jewels. So sure enough, he went to Vrindavan, and you know, somehow or another, but I guess he had that strong desire, he met Krishna. He actually got to see Krishna in the forest, and then he tried to, you know, enact his plan. So he was trying to, you know, make friends with Krishna and be very nice to him, and because he figured, you know, he's just a young child, I'll be able to kind of trick him, you know, by cleverly flattering him and like that. So he, you know, he started doing that, and then Prabhupada, there's an excerpt from a lecture where Prabhupada was talking about that. So he's going, oh, you have such nice ornaments, you are so rich, can I have them? And Krishna goes, no, my mother will be angry, I cannot. And Prabhupada laughs, says, Krishna has a child. So he became more and more eager, the thief, he became more and more eager for Krishna. And by Krishna's association, he had already become purified. Then at last, Krishna said, all right, you can take. But then he became a devotee immediately. In other words, he was already purified by Krishna's association. So he came with the wrong motive. He came with the motive to rob Krishna. But the result was that he became a devotee of Krishna. You know, Putana came with the motive of, let me kill Krishna. I mean, you can't have much of a worse motive than that. To associate with Krishna. I mean, even wanting to rob Krishna is better than wanting to kill Krishna. But, you know, she came with the motive, she wanted to kill Krishna. And she became not only just a devotee, but she was elevated to the Vatsalya Ras. I mean, she didn't just get, as talked about here in the verse, how the Lord bestows mercy on these demons, these yogis, by, you know, they generally get Sayuja Mukti. But Putana got something way, way beyond that. She got like a personal form of liberation and, you know, and the same, as I said, Vatsalya Ras. So that was amazing. So that's, and so Prabhupada concludes by saying, some way or other, we should come in contact with Krishna, some way or other. Then we'll be purified. So, so once again, that's the principle. The principle is that Krishna's all good absolute, in some way or other, we have to try to be in association with Krishna, and we have to try to bring people. You know, it's like twofold responsibility. For ourselves, understanding this, we should try to be in association with Krishna, follow somehow or another, approach Krishna, and also help other people approach Krishna. That's the other part of it. And that's a very important part of it. You know, if you have just one part of it, it's good, but it ain't going to work as well. You know, you're not going to make the same kind of progress in spiritual life if you just, you know, have just doing one part of the program, which is trying to yourself be approach Krishna, be in contact with Krishna. It really is important to do the other part of it. And on that note, I want to read something which I read a couple of days ago. I think it was on Friday as we were coming back from Sankirtan. We were just driving in the car, you know, and nobody was saying much of anything. I can't remember. So I thought, okay, let's make this a little spiritual. So I had this piece of this quote here that I something I heard on a conversation or a morning walk or a lecture that Prabhupada said, which I printed out and, you know, saved it. I said, okay, I'm going to read something. It's important. You know, it was myself who was there, Bhakti Kush and Bhakti Gus, sorry, and, Madhavendra Puri. Old brain, sorry. And so I thought, okay, let me read this. And I started reading it, and I started feeling really ecstatic when I was reading it. I was thinking, whoa, what's going on here? And I thought to myself, okay, this must be, this is because this is really important, and this is really important for devotees to hear this. So, you know, thinking like that, I decided to read it this morning as well, and it fits right in with the class as well. So I'll read you this. This is an excerpt from a morning walk that took place in Melbourne, 1974. Some of you have heard this before, but there's no harm in hearing it again. You know, it's a lot of repetition in Krishna consciousness. I mean, that's an understatement, right? We chant the Hare Krishna mantra 1,728 times a day, minimally. You know, every day we're singing the same songs, we're saying the 10 offenses, so no harm in hearing something again if it's important. So this is. So this is this excerpt from this conversation. They're talking, somehow or another, came around to the subject, topic of conversation came around to preaching. So Prabhupada says, that is missionary activities. They do not understand, but you have to make them understand. They are not calling you, I am suffering, please come. But it is your business to go and let them know that you are suffering, take this method. And for some reason, when I read it, I thought to myself, wow, actually no, it's just the opposite. What to speak of them saying, I am suffering, please come. It's the opposite. Preaching is a thankless task. They basically, some people actually out and out say it, you know, I'm good, go away, you know. But if they don't explicitly say it, you know, you get that feeling. You know, basically what they're feeling is, I'm doing fine. You're the one who needs, you know, to be helped. You're out here just going around bothering people, making a nuisance to yourself. I'm fine. You just go, you know, I'm fine, go away. And, you know, just like Papa says, they're not saying, I am suffering, please come. Just the opposite is really the response you get. Anyway, he goes on to say, but Papa says, it doesn't matter. We have to go and tell them in so many words. We have to communicate to them, not necessarily saying these words, but we have to communicate to them, you are suffering, you take this method, despite the fact that they're trying to communicate to us, I'm fine, go away, leave me alone. You know? Papa says, So it sounds like a real thankless task. And it is. On the material level, it sounds like a real thankless task. It is a real thankless task on the material level. But on the spiritual level, it's great. It's very, most intelligent thing a person could do. Because why? Here it comes. Says, Prabhupada says, that is the way of becoming very quickly recognized by Krishna. Which is, of course, exactly what we want. You see, so materially, who would want to do that? I remember when I was a kid, I used to live in a apartment building on the fifth floor, and one day I was looking out my window. I mean, I clearly remember this. I was looking out the window, out, you know, like the street and the little grass, and it was middle of, you know, afternoon or something like that. I remember thinking to myself, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do with my life, but one thing I know for sure is I don't want to be a salesperson. Honest. Because, you know, I just think the whole idea of having to approach people and try to sell them something and talk them into something and they might not even want it. And it's, you know, it was just like the whole, I just thought, that's, I know for sure I don't want to do that. And Hare Krishna, here I am for the last 42 years. But it's totally different. You see? You know, the point I'm making is on a mundane level, who'd want to do that? You know, who'd want to just have to be constantly, you know, approaching people who don't necessarily want to talk to you and trying to get them to convince them to do something they don't want to do. It's like really a drain, you know. But but for this purpose, then it takes on a totally different, you know, light. So anyway, so Prabhupada goes on. That is the way of becoming very quickly recognized by Krishna. That's why. That's why I'm doing it now for 42 years. You know, who cares if it's unpleasant? It's kind of like, you know, sometimes it seems very mechanical and you know, monotonous and wears you down and, you know, the negativity. But who cares? You know, it's like if I'm going to be quickly, very quickly recognized by Krishna because I'm doing that activity, so what? I'm prepared to, perform a bit of tapasya. I'm prepared to voluntarily accept some inconvenience to my body and my mind to achieve this wonderful, amazing blessing of being very quickly recognized by Krishna. And, Sankirtan devotees, experience this even like Krishna does. It's not just like, you have to go throughout your whole life and then right at the end, maybe we'll get some merit. No. Even like right here, right now, on a regular daily basis, Sankirtan devotees get some experience of this. Just like this, once again, last Friday I was at UCI, which can be a pretty, tough school. And that's what I was experiencing for like the first hour or two when I was trying to distribute, to the point where I was feeling, this is too much, man. These kids are just too unreceptive. Like, I'm worn out. I don't know if I could do this, And but it was only like about 1 o'clock or 1:30, so I thought, what will I do? I didn't want to quit, So I thought, okay, I'll just, I'll sit down, just so there was these concrete posts, they're just kind of like, I think they were to block vehicles from kind of going through, they put them there for that. So I just plunked myself down on top of one of those, which was, it was kind of like right in between the main walkway and the student center building. So there was a lot of pedestrian traffic. So I just plunked myself right down and I said, okay, we'll see what happens. I said, hey, you, come on, excuse me, do you go here? I start calling the kids over, And, lo and behold, somehow they started coming over. And, then at first it wasn't so, but anyway, I just kept at it. And then within a few minutes, the whole thing changed. And I realized, oh, wait a second, I can do this. And I went from feeling like, it just, within a period of 20 minutes, I went from feeling completely worn out and feeling like, I guess I'm washed up now. I guess it's been a nice run, but this looks like the end of my, really. That's the mind, The mind will, at least my mind does that, It just starts telling me, it's been great, but anyway, if everything's cool, good things have to come to an end, and it looks like you can't really do this anymore. That's how I was feeling. And I was convinced of it, based upon the way my body was feeling, my energy level, my mind. And then within a period of 20 minutes, I went to feeling wow, this is ecstatic. This is so far out, And I was calling these kids over, and they were coming, and they were taking the books, and, one Chinese guy gave a nice donation. I met this one Mormon fellow came over, and he was really nice. He took the Bhagavad Gita, gave a really nice donation, and it was just the whole thing changed. It just went from night to day within a period of 20 minutes, and I was feeling very enlivened and not, I wasn't totally blissed out, but enlivened, and definitely felt like something spiritual was going on there. So, So that's it. So getting back to the point, you experience being very quickly recognized by Krishna. It's not like we got to wait till, the moment of death or something like that. Anyway, Prabhupada goes on to say, otherwise, if you think they are not understanding, what is the use of going there? Let me sleep. That is not good. They are not understanding. Still, you have to go, then Krishna will take it. He is laboring so hard for my sake. Never mind, he is successful. It doesn't matter. But you are working hard for Krishna. That is noted down. That is our business, to be recognized by Krishna. Whether one man is converted or not converted, that is not our business. We shall try our best, but Krishna must see that I'm giving service to him. That's all. That is wanted. Not that you have to judge. You have approached so many people. Nobody became Krishna conscious. So anybody gets the idea from this. So, this is, I could read more, but it's the same thing. It's just more of the same, that this is the way to be very quickly recognized by Krishna. We have to try to be in contact with Krishna, and we have to try to bring people in contact with Krishna. And like Prabhupada's spiritual master, like Bhaktisiddhanta, yesterday it was his appearance, he said to Prabhupada, he said, I want you to go to the West and preach to these Westerners in the English language. And what he told them was, he said, that'll be good for them, and that'll be good for you. See, in other words, it's all auspicious. It's all auspicious. Preaching is all auspicious. It's not that, actually, be honest with you, the greatest, beneficiaries of when you're preaching is you. Because the people, you're going out there meeting so many people. Say, say you meet 200 people on a day of Sankirtan, something like that. So, they're with you, they're in contact with Krishna, maybe for a minute or so, and if they take a book, it's even better. But the whole day long, you're just, you're remembering Krishna, you're praying to Krishna, you're endeavoring to serve him. The greatest beneficiaries of the Sankirtan activity are the Sankirtan devotees. We get the most purification. Those people get some purification for sure, and it's the most important moment of their life. When they meet a devotee and get the opportunity to take a book and give a donation, engage in devotional service, that's the most important moment of their life. So, what to speak of the benefit that the devotee is getting? And so, yeah, really should, you know, be always kind of thinking how we could give Krishna consciousness to other people. And just make, so, because I want to make this lopsided, book distribution is not, it certainly is, but it's not the only way of giving people to Krishna, you know. It's very glorious, like, you know, so we have some devotees, Govinda Dadi's not here, maybe he's listening on the internet, and Gopalananda, you know, over the last, say, 5+ years, they've, you know, taken the initiative to make sure the Harinam party goes out. Very glorious. It's also very important. And, you know, preaching at the Sunday feast, there's so many different ways, you know. I mean, book distribution is one way. Harinam is another way. Preaching to guests when they come is another way. School programs, if Judah Kwan was here, preaching to the scientists, you know, prasadam distribution, all these are, you know, ways to become very quickly recognized by Krishna. Even once, to be honest with you, once about 10 years ago, I think it was, I asked Rabindranath, I said, oh, there he is. I said, Rabindranath, what's the deal? Why do you, when you have these festival days, why do you perform these jagyas? You know, because I was thinking, what is this, you know, everybody's swaha, and I said, what is that? Is that us, you know? And I was feeling like a little bit like, this is, what, you know, why are we doing this? And then he said to me, and I was really satisfied with his answer, he said, well, you know, he said, they're just going to stand around and talk pajapa. So I'm just, they're just going to be around, standing around talking pajapa, so I'm just trying to figure a way to engage him in something more Krishna conscious. And immediately when he said that, I went, yeah, he's right. He's right. You know, so that's it. So in other words, that's preaching. That's preaching. Preaching is you're trying to figure out a way to bring somebody closer to Krishna. You know, and it could take the form of doing a, you know, a jagya at the festival, or, you know, taking out a Harinam party, or giving somebody a mantra card. Or it could take so many forms. But the idea is that, in addition to that, that motivation should be there, that I want to become Krishna. I want to get closer to Krishna, and I want to bring people closer to Krishna. Both things. You know, and when you have both things there, then you're, you know, you're properly situated. Then you're in the, like, you know, you're kind of on the path of making the most rapid advancement. So I could stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yeah, he's pointing over there. Mother Kundarini, yeah.
I used to, thank you for a very nice class about preaching. Very nice. I used to also think about the fire jagya as kind of like, well, what, you know, is that something Prabhupada would emphasize so much? But the other day when I sat at the Nityananda fire sacrifice, uh-huh. And I have been very sick. So I was looking around at all the faces of all the people I know, and I was chanting Sri Nityananda, Sri Nityanandaya Swaha, and I just felt so much happiness from that. And I just wanted to say that when you see the devotees all doing the same thing, they're all on the same page, and they're all working toward the same goal to perform the sacrifice, it gives you a lot of strength and bliss. So I like that ceremony. It's really special. Also, I wanted to say about the book distribution is that you're right. The book distributor is actually the person who benefits the most. And when you get to distribute books, you may not like get so many results right away or like that, but the whole thing is really about how much did you associate with the Lord's lotus feet in your mind, you know, how because at the end of the day, how many books, or at the end of the day, like I've been very sick, at the end of the day, how many times did I cough, you know, how many times did I sneeze, how many times did I find the right medicine, you know, it's just driving me nuts. But the whole real thing is, you know, have you actually been able to associate with Krishna's lotus feet and his holy name? That's the only benefit we really derive. And hopefully the conditioned souls get the result of that, of our meditation. They get some byproduct from our meditation. Anyway, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Nice comment and question. Anybody else? Shastrakirpa.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, when you were talking about how the thief got purified by hearing about Krishna and associating with him.
The thief or the thief?
Thief.
Oh. Thief. Okay. Because I got something about thief. I'll get that in a minute.
It came to mind how there was a when Prabhupada was giving a talk one time in Mumbai, there was a young man in the crowd and he saw Prabhupada had a Rolex watch. And he actually joined the Hare Krishna movement so he could steal the watch from Prabhupada. And Prabhupada gave him the service because Prabhupada would translate late at night and there were street dogs barking. So Prabhupada gave him the service to chase the dogs away all night. And one day this boy came into Prabhupada's room. Prabhupada took off his Rolex watch and gave it to him. And by then he was already purified and he broke into tears saying, how did Prabhupada know that? That I came actually looking for the watch.
Where did you hear that story?
From the devotee who became a devotee. His name is Haridas. He is actually a big manager in Juhu temple right now.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's an amazing history actually how, you know, just by associating with Prabhupada he became so purified. He tells himself the story in the memories.
Yeah, you just made a good connection, which I neglected to do during the class. Yesterday we heard this incredible lecture by Prabhupada, and he's talking about how the spiritual master is, you know, the representative Sakshat Dharipan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he gave the example of, like, you know, if the representative of a company, if you're dealing with the representative of a company, it's just as like if you're dealing with the, you know, the owner, the chief executive officer or something like that. He's the representative. He's fully authorized. And he gave that example of the viceroy. How when the viceroy went to England, he used to dress like the king. He was respected like the king. He had the authority of the king. So for all practical purposes, he was the king. Well, he was a different person. So in the same way, the spiritual master is the representative of Krishna. So everything I said about Krishna throughout the class holds true for the pure devotee or the spiritual master. Same thing. You know, it's all good, absolute. Any association with the pure devotee is purifying. It's beneficial. Well, I'll tell it very quickly. I was, not this morning, yesterday morning, when I was chanting japa, this came to my mind. I was thinking about how important it is to take shelter of experts, you know, because it's the way you kind of like don't make mistakes. I mean, I was trying to find a van for the temple, for another traveling van, and, you know, Kush's father, actually, he buys and sells cars for a living, so I've been, you know, kind of working with him, and he's been giving me tips, you know, how to not get cheated and what to look, you know, how to do it. And I'm realizing, wow, I'm so glad I'm, you know, having this help, because otherwise I'd be making so many dumb mistakes. And I was thinking about, like, you could be walking around and, you know, thinking everything's fine, and then you could be just about on the verge of losing all your teeth. You know, until you go to a dentist and they take the x-rays and they do the exam and they tell you, okay, you need to do this distance. So, you know, same way. So I was thinking, making an analogy, well, okay, so there's an expert about car buying and selling cars, and there's an expert on your dental health, and I immediately came to my mind, wait a second, so who's the expert about life? I thought, yeah, Krishna. So the Bhagavad Gita is such an important thing because it's like Krishna giving you advice about life. Who knows better about life than Krishna, who is the origin of life, or whatever, and how quite I'd refer to it. He's so the Bhagavad Gita is like, you know, immeasurably valuable. Krishna's saying if you just follow the Bhagavad Gita, you have the best expert. You're hearing from the best expert about life, and the essence of the teaching of the Bhagavad Gita is, you know, Krishna Papa says right at the end of the 18th chapter is manmana. Always think of Krishna, become his devotee, worship him, offer your obeisances to him like that. So anyway, so that was in relation to teeth. Just the importance of taking shelter of an expert. And the greatest expert on life is Krishna, or his pure devotee, the spiritual master. So if we just follow their instruction, and even if it doesn't, you know, we might not be thinking, we might be thinking we're okay, but we're not. Just like in that example, you might be walking around thinking, yeah, I'm okay. My mouth is okay. And then when you go to the dentist, you have 17 cavities. You need a bridge, a root canal, and, you know, periodontal work or something like that. And you're walking around thinking, well, gee, everything feels okay. I guess I'm okay. So in the same way, people are walking around thinking, I'm okay. You know, you approach people on Sankirtan all the time. They're thinking, I'm good. And then, you know, but we know, no, you're not good. You just turn the clock forward a little bit, and you're in a dog body. Well, you're in a, you know, worm in the stool body. You're not good. We know that. They don't. Just like the dentist, they know. No, you're not. So we have to, you know, hear from the authority. We might be thinking, I'm good, but Bhagavad Gita tells us otherwise. So it's, you know, it's our duty to really take shelter of the Bhagavad Gita and really try to put those teachings into practice and share it with other people. And one last, very last point is that I was listening to the Sunday Feast lecture that the devotee was giving last night. I forget his name. What was it? Premananda Gaur. Very nice lecture. And one point, he was talking about the difference between knowledge, you know, gyan and vigyan. And I was thinking to myself, yeah, that's a very important point. And actually, I was thinking, you don't, until you put it into practice in your life, until you apply it, you don't really even have knowledge. I don't even like to call it knowledge. You have information. You see? And when you actually take that information and you put it into practice in your life, then you have knowledge. And then you can go from there to, you know, realize knowledge. But that's, you know, really important point. We're so fortunate. We've got everything right at our fingertips. And now we have to really, you know, discipline our mind to just take advantage of it, put it all into practice in our life, you know, practice it seriously, try to share it with other people seriously. Okay, I'll stop there. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Granth Sarov Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.
Thank you.